News Now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris met with Asian American leaders in Atlanta days after a gunman killed 8 people in the state.
President Biden says hate should have no safe harbor in America, and Asian Americans should not feel threatened.
Hearing all across the country is that hate and violence often hide in plain sight.
After meeting with Asian American community leaders in Atlanta about a spike in attacks during the coronavirus pandemic, President Biden urged all Americans to call out bigotry when they see it, saying silence is complicity. Police have not determined a motive in this week's shootings at Georgia Day Spas. 6 of the 8 victims were women of Asian descent. Jared Halpern, Fox News.
Members of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club will temporarily not be able to eat in the dining room after a few employees tested positive for COVID. That, according to people familiar with the situation who spoke anonymously, because they're not authorized to go on the record. Virginia is joining Maryland in giving taxpayers a few more weeks to file their state income tax returns.
Governor Ralph Northam announcing that the State Department of Taxation is extending the original May 1st deadline to May 17th. The change means that this year, state returns will be due on the same day as federal returns. Earlier this week, Maryland Comptroller Peter Franchot announced an extension on state taxes until July 15th. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
The D.C. metro area bled jobs in 2020. Nearly 6% of all jobs in the region were lost. The peak was in April. Since then, about 40% of the lost jobs came back, according to a report on job change done by the Stephen Fuller Institute. But we flatlined since October, according to Director Jeanette Chapman.
The flatlining is really a function of the rising case rates when we had our second local wave of COVID. And also the onset of colder weather meant that some of the things that we'd moved outside, like outdoor dining, people weren't as inclined to do that. And so people just stayed home more.
She expects a rebound this spring. WMAL Sports, plenty of upsets to open up the first round of the NCAA men's basketball tournament yesterday.
For just the 9th time in NCAA tournament history, a 15 seed defeated a 2nd seed as Oral Roberts shocked Ohio State 75-72 in overtime to earn their first win in the bracket since 1974. 13 seed North Texas earned their first tourney win in program history, upsetting 4th seed Purdue in OT 78-69 over in the Midwest region of the bracket, a classic 12-5 upset as Oregon State earned their first tournament victory since 1982, stunning Tennessee 70-56. 11 seed Syracuse rolled past San Diego State 78-62. While 10th seed Rutgers got their first win in the bracket since 1983, they took down Clemson 60-56. Matt Napolitano, Fox News.
The Caps beat the Rangers 2-1. The two teams play each other again tonight at 7. Spring training baseball, the Nats beat the Astros 10-9. Washington plays the Marlins tonight at 6:05. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, watch out for a disabled vehicle now on 395 southbound, just north of Seminary Road, and that is blocking the right lane. Watch out for a brief delay there. Traveling right now on the GW Parkway, keep in mind that northbound between the Spout Run Parkway and 123 northbound lanes will be closed for some road work today. Till about 7 o'clock this evening, traffic is diverted at the Spout Run Parkway, but the southbound lanes are open. Also, you will still find some accident activity in Woodbridge on the Prince William Parkway, westbound at Caton Hill Road. All lanes are blocked. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clear skies to start the weekend. Also, some cold temperatures this morning in the 20s and 30s, but we'll gradually get into the mid and upper 50s this afternoon. Under sunny skies, high pressure dominating the region this weekend. Later on tonight, another chilly night ahead. Low temperatures in the upper 20s in the outlying suburbs. Mid 30s around town for your Sunday. Full sunshine again, a little bit warmer. High temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. Hour two of the Saturday morning update for the first weekend of spring. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He's the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. Bet you're looking forward to springtime weather for those stand-ups on the lawn instead of the snow.
After the cold and the rain just this last week, Rick, yes. I want to start in New York this morning, and of course we now see that eight women have come out with accusations against Andrew Cuomo. There is an investigation underway by the Attorney General, and there is talk of an impeachment. And the question is, how does that process play out, and what are the politics of a possible impeachment for Andrew Cuomo? You wrote an article about it, and I think it's fascinating.
There's 150 members of the New York State Assembly, and it's strongly in Democratic hands. It's almost certain to vote by a majority to impeach the governor. That means Governor Cuomo will become the first governor of the Empire State since 1913 to be tried by the state Senate, which has 63 members in it, 40 Democrats and 23 Republicans. But there's a catch to it. He's tried along with those 63 senators by seven members of New York State's highest court, the Court of Appeals. And all seven members have been appointed by, you guessed it, Andrew Cuomo. This means that of 70 votes, a two-thirds vote plus one, that's 47 votes, are required to remove Governor Cuomo from office and thereby make Lieutenant Governor Hochul the new governor. Now, will this happen? No one is certain. Polls repeatedly show that most New Yorkers do not want Cuomo removed from office. He is a popular governor still, even though his popularity is dwindling. In addition, there's the question, would seven judges appointed by the governor who is on trial vote to remove him? One really can't say at this point. But the impeachment is not what one would think because it's quite unique having the jurists involved. So the case of the seven Cuomo judges may determine the fate of New York's embattled governor.
You know, it seems as though the allegations are coming out now, but when you delve into this story, it appears that there's been sort of a history here. You've got an interesting angle on some of that history.
Certainly. These stories circulated around Albany and the state capitol for years. Remember, Andrew Cuomo is now completing his third term. That's 12 years in office. And would be seeking something that eluded his famous father, Governor Mario Cuomo, a fourth term in the governor's mansion. I spoke to Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, Republican of New York, who was in the state assembly when Cuomo was governor a few years back. I asked her, when did she call for his resignation? She said in 2014. Ooh. She'd heard these stories about him, that there was an abusive atmosphere amid the governor's office, and that he's treated people in this way for quite a long time. I might add that we haven't even begun to get into the scandal about the nursing home, in which the deaths of people from the COVID virus in nursing homes was underreported by state bodies and outlets. We're going to hear a lot more of this. And let me put it this way. With eight people now saying that the governor created a toxic atmosphere, you're going to hear a lot of stories from several years back on this.
President Biden in Atlanta on Friday with Vice President Harris, and he was bragging about the election of the two Democratic senators in Georgia. You have a story about a possible Republican candidate heading for the Georgia elections in 2022, and it's somebody we know.
Certainly, and it's someone everyone in Georgia knows and very possibly genuflexed before. Herschel Walker, the all-time University of Georgia Bulldogs football great, someone who came from humble beginnings in the state, and went on to be a hero. From there, he played professional football for numerous teams, and he became friends with the owner of the New Jersey Generals, the late New Jersey Generals, one Donald Trump. He's a conservative Republican, a Trump supporter, and someone who testified before Congress against reparations for slavery, saying slavery ended 130 years ago and didn't need to be revisited. Will he seek the Republican nomination? That's uncertain at this point, but it's reached a point where so many other Republicans who are going to run for the Senate are now saying, run, Herschel, run. And he has one other problem. He lives in Texas, that being the home state of his last pro football gig with the Dallas Cowboys. He'd have to move back to Georgia by the spring in order to qualify to run. But incredibly, it doesn't seem that's a problem with voters. He leads Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock in the polls already completed.
$1.9 trillion COVID relief package. There is legislation that passed this week that could have a real impact on small business and workers and companies in general across the country. A pretty big deal, but did not get that front and center attention, with the exception of an article you wrote about it.
Well, you're talking about the PRO bill, P-R-O, or Protecting the Right to Organize. Very simply, Rick, right-to-work laws have been a part of federal and state laws going back to the post-World War II years. This means that no American can be denied a job for his refusal to join a union. 27 states have that exact language, the right to work, in their state laws at this point. But now, all of that work and that effort, and I might add that one of the states that's a right-to-work state is union-heavy Michigan. But all that will be for naught, because this federal legislation, if it becomes law, will undermine the state laws and essentially scuttle them, allowing greater union organization and a move to increase the already dwindling union membership. I might add that this was passed with the votes of every Democrat plus five Republicans from states that they fear they will get the retribution from organized labor. But from the 27 states that have right-to-work laws, 69 Democrats voted for the measure, and you're going to hear a lot from right-to-work advocates about them. This is going to be a big issue in 2022.
Republicans objecting to California Congressman Eric Swalwell on the House Intelligence Committee. What's the latest on that?
Well, they're objecting to it, and they openly say that you can fault people for criticizing the election results, but you can't fault someone for sleeping with a communist spy from China. He's never admitted that he had an affair with this woman who clearly is in the employ of Chinese intelligence. But it is out there for discussion. Meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is doubling down and is going to protect her fellow Northern Californian, Mr. Swalwell. So this is a major effort that continues. It comes at a point, incidentally, where Democrats want to reverse the results from Iowa's 2nd District, which was won by Congressman Marionette Miller Meeks by 6 votes. A close race, but recounted twice, certified by state officials, and Ms. Miller Meeks was sworn in. Funny, not so much as a fuss has been made about Eric Swalwell. I have a feeling we will hear more about the Swalwell case as time goes on, and Republicans will push for his removal. When it becomes clear he's a liability, then Pelosi will drop him, I believe.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter, at John Gizzi. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir, and I assure you, we'll have a whole range of new topics to discuss next week as the news continues.
You bet we will. All right, 717 Saturday Morning Update. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, the disabled vehicle on 395 southbound north of Seminary Road now cleared, and looks like everything has been reopened. In Woodbridge, the earlier accident on the Prince William Parkway westbound at Caton Hill Road, that also cleared, everything reopened there. No other issues reported in Virginia at this time. Be aware that on the GW Parkway northbound between Spout Run and 123, that will be closed all day for a work zone. Traffic is diverted at the Spout Run Parkway. Southbound lanes are open. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clear skies to start the weekend. Also some cold temperatures this morning in the 20s and 30s, but we'll gradually get into the mid and upper 50s this afternoon under sunny skies. High pressure dominating the region this weekend. Later on tonight, another chilly night ahead. Low temperatures in the upper 20s in the outlying suburbs. Mid 30s around town for your Sunday. Full sunshine again. A little bit warmer. High temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
30 degrees in D.C., 718, Saturday morning update.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday morning update for the first day of spring. I'm Rick Fowler, and it's great to have Cheryl Atkinson join us. She is the host of Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning on ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning, and happy springtime to you.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
Well, it is not such a happy springtime at the southern border, and you have been down recently. We've seen Republicans down this week, and we are hearing from a Democrat, and you actually sit down with a key Democrat in Texas. Who is it, and what did he have to tell you about the southern border and the crisis at the border?
Well, that's Congressman Henry Cuellar of Texas, a Democrat who we've spoken to over the years. He's very hawkish on protecting and securing our borders, but also, of course, being humanitarian in the way that he says you have to be if kids come across the border. But he doesn't think anybody should be trying to illegally cross. And it's been interesting to cover the border and to learn that, you know, as he describes, Hispanics who live in these border towns are some of the toughest against illegal immigration because they see the direct impact of it. This includes the mayor of Laredo, Texas. This includes Henry Cuellar's brother, who is a sheriff down there. So it's interesting to hear his views. And he, you know, thinks that the Biden administration made some mistakes in messaging. He thinks that this situation down there is bad and growing worse. And he gave what I think is a hint that he seems to think the Biden administration is thinking twice about dialing back on some of President Trump's get tough illegal immigration policies that they were considering doing and had already done in one case. That maybe they're going to sort of go back on that a little bit. So he's going to talk about that with me on Full Measure Sunday.
Let's turn to another troublesome story this week, and that is the meetings that the United States has been having with China in Alaska. And the opening volley was a very contentious meeting. But you've looked into the policy of the current administration versus the prior administration when it comes to China. That story is tomorrow morning.
Well, yes, we asked Scott Thuman, who works with us, to really look at what the Biden administration early on is signaling in terms of China policy, because everybody always says that's our most important foreign policy threat and challenge. So first, Scott's going to explain why that is, because you hear that a lot without people telling you much about why that's the case for ordinary Americans. But then we asked him to kind of assess what's going on with the Biden administration in China. And so he spoke to a lead Democrat and a lead Republican, specialists on foreign affairs, to get their views. And I thought one thing that was pretty interesting is they seem to think that the Biden approach is very similar to the Trump approach when it comes to China, that there's not a whole lot of difference in the rhetoric and the policy, at least so far.
A story that we have heard but has not been front and center much in the news. However, the numbers in the allegations of sex abuse against the Boy Scouts, staggering numbers. And you have a story on that tomorrow.
Yeah, I looked into it because, like a lot of people, I was seeing these ads last year on TV that were saying, if you have a sexual abuse claim against the Boy Scouts, you have until such and such date to file. And I'm thinking, what is this about? So come to find out, after poking around a little bit, the Boy Scouts had a lot of sexual abuse claims being filed against them and started to understand this is a huge financial liability. They wanted to see if they could clear them out once and for all by handling them sort of with this global action by filing for protection, financial protection in bankruptcy court, settling all the cases somehow, like gathering them and putting them behind them and then moving forward. I don't know that they thought they were going to get in excess of 95,000 claims, some of them going back decades. Some horrible stories. I looked back and found you know, maybe some of the cases are hard to prove or questionable, but there are many, many that can be traced to terrible stories with firm convictions of, you know, horrible predators, many, many predators that worked through the Boy Scouts to victimize young boys over the years. So I'm just sort of looking at that and what happens next for the Boy Scouts. They want to stay an organization and keep going. The question is, once they figure out how to settle these claims and pay, do these payouts, can they survive financially? And can the name survive the black eye that they're getting over this?
En route to Atlanta on Friday, as President Biden was boarding Air Force One, he slipped three times going up the steps. You probably won't see it on the news, although there is video. And Cheryl, as I was looking at your site on Friday night, I saw your story where you provide the links to all of the coverage when President Trump was walking down the ramp at West Point. He said it was slippery. And you've got a number of links to videos of President Trump and how he handled that story. And I just thought it was a very interesting contrast to the way that story is being handled by the media today with President Biden.
Well, you know, President Trump shuffled down a ramp at the end of a long appearance when he spoke at a commencement at West Point Military Academy. And that made international headlines. He's sick. Something's wrong with him. He can barely walk. He's on his deathbed, whatever you want to, you know, to say. And even candidate Biden at the time got in on the act saying, look at him, you know, shuffle around and look at me. Look at how I go up the steps. So he probably regrets, you know, sort of mocking Trump about that particular thing right now. But what I did, I thought was fun. I tried to watch all of the candidates' speeches and appearances, both last election and 2020. And that was easy because Biden didn't make many, but I tried to watch Trump's. And he made a very, very funny, maybe 15-minute long speech that I linked to in this post at CherylAxson.com because I think it's pretty funny. His supporters just roared with laughter and applauded as Trump went over why he shuffled down the ramp. And I won't spoil it because I can't do it justice, but the reasons he gives and the reenactments that he does, they're pretty funny. So if you want to see that, you can just go find that on my website.
That's CherylAtkison.com. And, of course, Full Measures tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Cheryl, thank you very much, as always.
Thanks, Rick. Have a good weekend.
7:25, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We're going to talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, get his read on the border, and we'll talk with KT McFarland, get her read on some of the foreign policy issues facing the Biden administration. That's all coming up on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Many Washingtonians want the fencing around the Capitol to be removed, and that will happen this weekend. The acting House Sergeant-at-Arms says the outer fencing's going days earlier than expected. The inner fencing was repositioned earlier this week. The southern border's being overwhelmed by people crossing into the U.S. illegally. So the Biden administration's considering flying those people north to the Canadian border, according to the Washington Post.
This, as we already knew, that migrants were being shipped from the Rio Grande Valley sector to El Paso earlier this week. The fact is, the facilities that they are standing up, the processing center here, at full capacity.
Fox's Griff Jenkins. Investigations continue into multiple scandals involving New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
The New York Times is reporting New York Attorney General Letitia James' investigation into allegations of sexual harassment has expanded and is now looking into claims that another aide, Larry Schwartz, made calls to Democratic lawmakers searching for support for the embattled governor. In addition, a new probe by the FBI is looking into whether Cuomo's office cut a deal at the height of the COVID shutdown to shield healthcare workers from lawsuits.
Fox's Lauren Green. WMAL Sports, for the ninth time in NCAA tournament history, a 15th seed defeated a second seed as Oral Roberts beat Ohio State. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In the district, watch out for accident activity on Pennsylvania Avenue in Southeast. Eastbound at Minnesota Avenue, right lane is blocked, so use caution there. Watch for some delays. In Arlington, a portion of Army-Navy Drive is closed in both directions between South Fern Street and South East Street for construction until about 6 o'clock this evening. And on the GW Parkway northbound, that is closed between Spout 1 Parkway and 123 for construction until about 7 o'clock this evening. Traffic is being diverted at the Spout 1 Parkway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
High pressure will settle in overhead this weekend, making for plenty of sunshine. Also, some milder temperatures. Only reached around the 50-degree mark yesterday. Should reach the upper 50s this afternoon. Later on tonight, it will be cool again. It will be chilly. Lows in the upper 20s in the outlying suburbs. Mid-30s around town. For your Sunday, though, we'll continue this warming trend. Temperatures back in the lower 60s under sunny skies. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Rick Fowler, WMAL.
And it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. And as you know, we've been reflecting on Andy Ockershausen over the years and enjoyed having a few minutes to talk about Andy earlier on the show this morning. As we continue on, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. And, of course, he is the author of Operation Dark Heart. And Tony is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, it is always an honor and a pleasure to have you on with us, sir.
Same here. Thank you, Rick. Always great to join you on Saturday mornings.
Well, you know, we're seeing the border crossings surge, migrant influx. The Biden administration is saying, well, you know, stay home for now. You can come up later, but we're not ready for you. And obviously, the way that message is being played out in Honduras and El Salvador, it's like, come on down. So right. The question I have for you is, the transparent Biden administration, I commend them on their efforts for transparency, except for the fact that when it's something they don't want you to see, they're not very transparent. And at the border, they have been limiting and restricting media access. At one point earlier in the week, they were not allowing lawyers in to see where the children were being held. What is this about the suppression of information?
Well, that's exactly what it appears to be. It's a crisis, and they want to cover up the crisis. Tragically, I believe there were children who just drowned the other day under the completely insane and reckless policy of this administration. They drowned crossing the Rio Grande River, and yet somehow Speaker Pelosi and other Democrats say it's quote unquote under control. Well, if this is under control, then I'm sure that this administration is going to crater before the summer. This is just insane. Their own rhetoric, candidate Biden's rhetoric, kind of primed the pump, talking about being open to everything. And then the policy changes, which went in instantly, dismantle the Trump successful policy to include all of the elements of that policy. This is what happens. So this was predicted by many and now is being observed by as few as possible because of the cover-up of the Biden administration.
What is the solution to the whole issue of handling the influx while
right.
you have those who have lined up and gone through the legal process? I just don't understand how they're welcoming everyone in across the border without going through the process. How do we handle this? What do we do about
well,
this?
Well, that's been a complaint by a number. I talked to a number of legal immigrants from Mexico, and that's frustration. A lot of folks have come through the process and are very proud of the fact that they're now Americans, and they see this as a real insult. Plus, it doesn't really buy you anything. I mean, the way they're doing it right now, Rick, you're actually doing things to crash and harm the communities which are here. This benefits only those who are trying to push for a permanent underclass. What the Biden administration is trying to do is a continuation of the Obama administration, trying to create these so-called, you know, migrants to become permanent members of a voting class that supports them. This is very dangerous, and it's counterproductive, and it's going to fail. And yet they continue to do it. And the thing to do is to go back to the Trump administration policies, complete the border wall, enforce the laws, and work with our allies in the region to make sure that people in Honduras and Ecuador and all these other places are stopped in the country of origin to go through a process, not allowed to come into Mexico.
We're going to talk with KT McFarland about the foreign policy issues with China. And we saw a very aggressive stance that China took in those meetings in Alaska Thursday and Friday of this past week. Wanted to talk to you more on the military side in terms of China flexing its muscle at the talks. They kind of feel like they're in control of the world at this point. We know they have the largest navy in the world. And where do you see the military concerns when it comes to China, the actions they take or the stance they're taking from a national security and military standpoint?
The Chinese would be well to remember the history of a lot of the great conflicts that have happened, where the United States may not have started out with the best or most, but ended up using what it had effectively to create more capacity to defeat an enemy. So the Chinese, we've been studying the Chinese militarily for decades. We understand a great deal about them. I think they don't recognize their own vulnerabilities. And I'm not saying this is a threat. I'm saying this is a reality. The language that they're using indicates, as you just mentioned, that they think that, hey, we're now in the driver's seat. And that's what their intentions are. But that's part of the problem is that, again, this goes back to the this is almost like a cascade of failure of the Biden administration in less than 3 months. This is another area where there's a great deal of danger of the Chinese really believing their own press and doing something like trying to take over and invade Taiwan or do more things to trouble our regional allies such as the South Koreans, Japanese, or Vietnamese. These are things that have to be considered. And Tony Blinken's milquetoast language. Anybody who watched that video, Blinken was not only were they speaking a different language, they were speaking a different language. Blinken said nothing except platitudes, which got him in trouble. And those platitudes, Rick, in the military world will get you killed because they will act on the perception of weakness.
We got about 2 minutes, and it'd probably take a half an hour to sort this one out, Tony. But there were sanctions from the Biden administration. They slapped sanctions on two Houthi leaders on Tuesday this week, citing their alleged roles in cross-border attacks on Saudi Arabia, shipping vessels in the Red Sea, and the rebels in Yemen. They're Iran-backed rebels. And they said on Wednesday the rebels warning that the U.S. sanctions imposed the previous day on two of their military leaders would only prolong the conflict in the impoverished Arab country. Help us to put this in perspective. Obviously important enough that we're imposing sanctions.
Yeah, so Yemen continues to be a proxy conflict between the legitimate government sanctioned by the U.N., supported by Saudi Arabia, and then the Houthis supported by Iran. The Iranians have been pushing hard to destabilize the region, and Yemen doesn't take much to destabilize. They have a number of crises. One of them is just potable water. And so what we see now playing out is the Biden administration, again, attempting to kind of get back into the game. They're kind of going after the Houthi. They're trying to kind of put pressure on the Iranians because they want to start trying to get the Iranians back to the table to start negotiating on their nuclear program. And again, I think it's not thought. I don't think they've really thought and decided on a clear path forward. And so this is another area of the Biden administration where I don't see a great deal of progress being made. And again, the Iranians are feeling very emboldened. And so I think we'll see more of the Houthi being very aggressive with the Saudi Arabians. And I don't see this working out well for the Biden administration or our Saudi allies.
Well, the geniuses that were going to come in and reset U.S. foreign policy and correct all the damage the Trump administration has done, they got a mess on their hands with China, a mess on their hands with Russia, and a mess on their hands with Iran and now Yemen. So thank you very much, Lieutenant.
90 days in.
Hey, real quick, what's on Thought to Action, your podcast this week?
So we're doing a number of things regarding accountability. We have a special one that we just put up regarding government bureaucracy and how bureaucracy tends to actually make it difficult to do anything, especially fight war. So I hope everybody checks it out.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and that's, of course, at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. Well, those talks with China in Alaska, the end of the week. How'd those go? We'll ask KT McFarland next. But first, off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Michelle Murray's there this morning.
On 66 eastbound, just west of the Beltway, watch out for a disabled vehicle now blocking the right lane and a brief delay approaching that area. In the district, you will still find accident activity on Pennsylvania Avenue in southeast, eastbound at Minnesota Avenue where the right lane is blocked. Keep in mind that in Arlington, a portion of Army-Navy Drive is closed between South Fern Street and South East Street until about 6 o'clock this evening for road work. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Clear skies to start the weekend. Also some cold temperatures this morning in the 20s and 30s, but we'll gradually get into the mid and upper 50s this afternoon. Under sunny skies, high pressure dominating the region this weekend. Later on tonight, another chilly night ahead. Low temperatures in the upper 20s in the outlying suburbs. Mid 30s around town for your Sunday. Full sunshine again, a little bit warmer. High temperatures in the lower 60s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Holding steady at 30 degrees in the nation's capital at 747. It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, and she was the first Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump White House. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to read you some headlines from the U.S.-China talks in Alaska, and then I'm going to ask you what your headline would be. From VOA, the Voice of America Asia, U.S. concludes tough talks with China in Alaska. The New York Times, tense U.S.-China talks end with no breakthrough. PBS NewsHour, U.S.-China exchange strong words, but both label talks constructive. What would your headline be?
The new Cold War. Look, there's been a U.S.-China Cold War for years, for a good decade, 15 years, and now it's at least out in the open. The Chinese, what they do at the beginning of every administration, and they did this with the Trump administration, is they send a delegation of senior officials over, usually the same senior officials, because their senior officials never change, and they sit down with the Americans and they say, here's our list of core demands. That's what they did with us. Sat across the table from us up in New York during the Trump transition and said, here are our core interests. These are our core demands. In other words, these are our red lines. We don't want to negotiate about them. We don't even want you to talk about them because they're our internal matters. And at that point, they talked about Hong Kong and Taiwan. Since then, they've added the Uyghurs in the concentration camps. So that's what they sat down with. Aside from the Biden administration, side to side, these are our core demands, and the Biden administration said, no, not so fast. We have human rights issues here in Hong Kong and in the Uyghur concentration camps. Now, that was going to probably happen anyway behind closed doors, but the fact that the Americans came out swinging during what should have been just a handshake and a photo op, the Americans came out swinging with a statement saying that these areas were important to us. And then the Chinese, who were taken back on their heels by that, said, wait a minute, no, these are not issues. And then it went back and forth and back and forth for an hour and a half, apparently. So there's no going back now. This is now out in the open, and frankly, I think it's a good thing. I wouldn't have done it this way if I were in charge, but it's now out in the open. And why is it out in the open? It's because the Chinese are convinced. You cannot unconvince them. They are convinced that they are the rising power, that the United States is declining power, that democracy is dysfunctional, that free market capitalism doesn't work in the 21st century, and that this is their time. And so there's no amount of convincing you're going to do to them in a negotiating table. The only convincing you can do to them is in coal power politics.
Well, you've talked about the Quad Alliance. That's U.S., Japan, Australia, India. What other avenues do we have in terms of trying to leverage against China? I mean, China is very effective at weaving their way into all of the economies of these countries. And, you know, we've seen the NBA marketing to China, and all of the U.S. companies have financial interests in China. All these other countries around the world have these financial interests in China. How do we gather a coalition to kind of push back when they're so infiltrated everywhere?
Well, the alternative is to just give up and let them run the world. I think, and this will take real skillful diplomacy, and I don't know that the Biden administration has it or they have the guts for it. But what it will take now is for the United States to go to the primarily in Asia, but to Japan, Australia, India, all of whom have been screwed by China recently and historically, and say we are going to form a new NATO alliance. We are going to form an economic alliance, and we are going to particularly form a security alliance. We're going to start having war games together. We are going to share technologies. India, which is about to surpass China in population, the economic potential of India far surpasses the economic potential of trading with China. So I think the United States then goes to India and says, look, we built China, right? We built up China. We're going to help you, too. We're going to build up you the same way. And then we really focus a lot of efforts and give the same kind of priorities and special favors to India that we have given to China. And then the second part of it would be at home and domestically. The United States needs a Manhattan Project, an Operation Warp Speed, whatever you want to call it, but a concerted government-wide, national economy-wide effort to maintain our technological lead. We're about to spend a lot of money, right, on people and jobs. Why not focus it on spending the money on training people for high-tech jobs and creating a whole new generation of high-tech industries? That's the only way we come out of this well. If not, if the United States continues to do the culture civil wars and cancel culture and who's more racist and who's not racist and all the garbage that we're doing now, then I think it will be very difficult because democracy will be dysfunctional. Let's just hope the Biden administration is up to it. My guess is they're not. So if we can just stay alive until 2022 when the Republicans will take the House and the Senate, and then I think the White House in 24, and then they will be like Reagan was after Jimmy Carter, and we can once again restore American creativity and leadership.
And a quick note on the role of human rights in all of this. Of course, we've been highly critical of China about human rights, but they of course, did their messaging in the talks by talking about the riots this summer, what happened with George Floyd. So they're trying to project the image that we violate human rights around the world. How does this play into all of these negotiations and discussions going forward?
Well, if that's where the negotiations want to focus, then I think it goes around and around in a little vicious little circle. The Chinese don't care about human rights. They've shown us that. They don't care about our human rights. They don't care about their human rights. What they care about is being the dominant world power economically, technologically, militarily. That's where we have to make sure that they're not allowed to take the lead. I mean, they plan to be the dominant power and replace us. And then human rights, they won't even exist. The human rights will be whatever the Chinese dole out to people on the basis of their own self-interest. I think it's always worth remembering in times like this, which do appear dark. You know, as you point out, the Chinese are all over it already, and they're into institutions, they're into countries, they're into companies. They're in the pockets of individuals. It's really worth pointing out that while the Chinese started the pandemic, who cured it? Who created the vaccines? Who created not one, not two, three, four, more in the making? Who created the cure for the vaccine? The United States. So don't sell us short. When we mobilize our efforts, as we did with Trump's Operation Warp Speed, we can do anything. But the question is Biden up to the toughness that it's going to take to mobilize the nation and the toughness it's going to take the body blows that will definitely now come from the Chinese?
KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thank you so much as always.
Pleasure and an honor.
7:58, Saturday morning update on WMAL. News is coming up at 8 o'clock, and then it is Garden Sense. Enjoy that first day of spring, even though it's 30 degrees in the nation's capital.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM, WMAL, a Cumulus station.